Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and we're going to continue our special coverage here of President Trump's first speech to the UN General Assembly. We've invited Andrew Bacevich to join us for some analysis. He's Professor Emeritus of History and International Relations at Boston University and with us from Massachusetts. And Andrew, welcome back to the show. It's good to talk to you again.
Oh, thank you.
I should say that you have an article in Foreign Affairs magazine that coincidentally I had just started reading this morning before the Trump speech. It's called Saving America First, What Responsible Nationalism Looks Like. Do you have a better sense of how President Trump, now that he's president, not as candidate, thinks about America first after you've heard what he said to the UN?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think the no part is that what the president says tends to be so filled with contradictions, so erratic, that at times it's hard to know what to take seriously. Now, today he was trying to be serious. This is Trump, the guy who reads from the teleprompter. Mm-hmm. It appeared, and I think that the speech was an interesting speech in the overriding theme, which was his emphasis on sovereignty. And certainly that connects to his the campaign posturing about America first. But what he was talking about was not simply American sovereignty, but global sovereignty. So he was creating an image of a world consisting of sovereign, independent nation states. And implicit in that, I think, was a rejection of what, broadly speaking, people on the left would prefer, and that is a world that somehow is going to become a world without borders. So a world sort of that looks like a kind of a great big planetary European Union. Mm-hmm. And Trump has said, no, that's not my vision for the United States of America. I think that will have appeal on the right. I think it will rub people on the left the wrong way. But at a minimum, it was an interesting statement, remarkably, in a sense, philosophical for President Trump. On the other hand, then we had this angry, over-the-top posturing, particularly directed at North Korea and Iran. Big threats, you know, mocking Kim Jong-un.
As Rocket Man,
once again,
right?
Repeating the charge that the Iran nuclear deal was the worst thing that ever happened. It was an embarrassment. And then, but you're left wondering, okay, so what are you going to do about it? And that's where, again, I get puzzled by the gap that is so often evident between the things he says and the kind of decisions that he ends up making. I mean, if the Iran nuclear deal is such a bad deal, as he again reiterated, okay, pull out. But that's not what he does. He kind of leaves everything dangling.
One of the things that you've done in the piece is tease out what we thought he was saying about America first as a candidate and then what we're seeing in the administration. And I want to pull a couple sentences from your article. You said, fears that his, meaning Trump's, embrace of America first will lead the United States to turn its back on the world have already proved groundless. Ordering punitive airstrikes against a regime that murders its own citizens while posing no threat to the United States, as Trump did in Syria, is not isolationism, nor is sending more U.S. troops to fight the campaign in Afghanistan the very epitome of the endless wars that Trump once disparaged. I think this gets to what you've said about the inherent contradictions in a lot of what he says and does.
And I think the speech today is part and parcel of that. I mean, here was a guy who was a candidate, basically denounced the United Nations, a worthless organization, and that was not the tone today. He certainly found fault with the United Nations, but it was the kind of fault that the fault in the sense of disappointment that it has failed to live up to its founding ideals, wanting the United Nations to become more effective. Does he mean that? Does he even understand the significance of the words that he's reading off the teleprompter? Very difficult to tell, but what we saw today was not Trump as a promoter of outright isolationism.
This is the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, that whether America First is a convenient and he's president, and effective umbrella that he thinks of in somewhat, you know, malleable and murky terms. And then people like you try to discern exactly what he means by that, when maybe he doesn't really, that there's no real doctrine here.
Oh, I think you're putting your finger on it. Exactly. I mean, this is not an individual who entered office with a very deep understanding of American history, of the tradition of U.S. diplomacy, or frankly, even of the way the world works. But an intuitively a brilliant politician, in at least some respects, he either figured out or was told that in running for the presidency, embracing this phrase, America First, was going to have appeal, in particular, to those that potentially would become Trump supporters and did become Trump supporters. Of course, then he becomes president, and now people are saying, oh, okay, America First, what's that really mean? And there is no clear meaning to my mind. That is to say, there really is no Trump foreign policy. We have a number of initiatives, inconsistent, and it's interesting here, you know, here we are in September, there really has been no big speech by him or by any of his principal subordinates that lays out an American grand strategy in the Trump era. Now we might say that the speech today, with its framing of a world of sovereign states, could become the basis of that kind of a strategy. But there is really no American grand strategy thus far under his presidency.
Joe says on Twitter, it's a slogan, a catchphrase. He's weakened our influence in a lot of ways, but most clearly by not staffing his State Department, etc. Deeper in the piece, you write about what a reimagined America First approach to international affairs would look like. And you say, this need not imply turning a blind eye to human rights abuses, yet an American First foreign policy would acknowledge that on an array of hot button issues as varied as gun ownership and the status of transgender people, the definition of rights is in a state of flux. I also wonder if it's also the result of whatever impulse the president has. I mean, I think of the way he reacted with the Syrian chemical attack, whether that was driven by, as we've already kind of examined, an overall doctrine, or it's impulsive and I'm not going to stand for that, which I think we also see with North Korea.
Yeah, that was, as far as we can tell, if we take the president's own word seriously, that was an impulsive decision. You know, he was personally upset by the images of the Syrians who were suffering and dying as a result of chemical attack, and sort of grabbed the phone and ordered the Pentagon to launch a retaliatory strike. What did the retaliatory strike actually accomplish? Not a heck of a lot, apart perhaps from making the president feel a little bit better. So I do think that's evidence of this kind of impulsive decision. I mean, on North Korea, the fire and fury rhetoric of whatever it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, to my mind, unnecessary, unhelpful, but again, evidence of his inclination to fly off the handle, other than when he is reading from some script, as he was today. It's disturbing. I mean, again, one would like to think that a nation such as ours would have a well-articulated, coherent foreign policy, both to reassure our friends and allies, but frankly also to reduce the possibility of miscommunication with regard to our adversaries. And when you have rhetoric that is all over the place, I think that increases the possibility for people making stupid decisions. Not necessarily Trump making stupid decisions, but others making stupid decisions as they try to puzzle out what exactly the United States stands for at this particular moment.
Andrew, a quick question in the couple minutes we have left here. Is it clear to you, while we were talking about impulse, that North Korea is pursuing a fairly strategic policy here, even though the president seems to be suggesting that, you know, one false move and it could all blow up? And we heard what he said today at the UN. But when you look at the things that North Korea has done, this seems very methodical and strategic. What's your view on that?
Well, I'm not an expert on North Korea, but my sense is that people who do study North Korea believe that the Kim Jong-un regime, as despicable as he and his henchmen are, that they are behaving rationally. They are playing an exceedingly weak hand. It's a nation that is virtually isolated. Even its friend China is not all that much of a friend. They're intent on ensuring their own survival, and they believe that acquiring nuclear weapons and the ability to deliver them is the best way to ensure their survival. I mean, and they can look around at other countries. Remember when Muammar Gaddafi gave up his nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. or at least gave up what was some kind of a nuclear weapons program, lo and behold, the next thing that happened was that the Americans were participating in an air campaign to eliminate Muammar Gaddafi. So there is good reason for them to want to have a nuclear weapons capability. If they're rational, that's a big if they're rational, then they can be deterred. I'm in the camp that thinks that at least in the near term, that ought to be the focus of U.S. effort. And deterrence requires sober rhetoric, not wild threats, in order to ensure the credibility of a deterrent posture.
Andrew, a pleasure to talk to you again. We really appreciate you being available to us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Andrew Bacevich is Professor Emeritus of History and International Relations at Boston University. I highly recommend the piece that is published in Foreign Affairs magazine this month. It's called Saving America First, What Responsible Nationalism Looks Like.